Next is a meeting with disciples on November 17th, 1992 at the Bombay Temple.
I was thinking of this meeting and, the other morning to Mal Krishna Maharaj in his class, he said that he was talking about how disciples render service, and he said the spiritual master, he should reciprocate by giving Hari Katha, not just that the disciple does service. Just as I may come here or other spiritual masters, and the disciples come and they cook and clean and do so many things. So then he mentioned that Prabhupada, he gave Harikatha by writing so many books. So when he said that, I thought that that's also a main way that I try to reciprocate with devotees. Of course, there's really no need. We have no need for, personally, for any services. But it's part of the reciprocation. That when I accept a disciple, I take it as my service, and then it's a responsibility. Just as the disciple has a responsibility, I have a responsibility. Then I was thinking of our particular situation in ISKCON, and that is, we live in Prabhupada's movement, or Prabhupada's temple. It's very obvious here in Bombay that such a big place, and such a shelter from the material world, and so much work to do, so much service to do. And so many senior Vaishnavas of ISKCON come and go from here. And to some degree it's like that wherever you are in ISKCON. So someone might raise a question, since I'm already living in Prabhupada's temple and house with so much spiritual facilities, what is the real importance of my relationship with my spiritual master? It could be said, and it could even, this mentality could develop, that it doesn't seem to be so important. But that's not the right idea. We were talking, Shamakunda and I, just before, that the relationship with a spiritual master should develop naturally. And if it does, that's the most natural kind of relationship that we have in spiritual life, even though ISKCON is what it is. That Prabhupada is the instructing spiritual master and founder Charya for all the devotees who come, and that there is so much general service that's given by the institution. Still, when we join, we will develop a relationship if we practice properly, and if we read the books properly and follow them, we'll develop a relationship with someone who we will eventually ask to be our spiritual master. Now, in two of your cases, there has been some disturbance to that natural development. And another thing that has happened, which is now part of the past, these things are all like ISKCON's mistakes in trying to grow up. Another mistake that's been corrected is that after Prabhupada's disappearance for a number of years, this relationship wasn't allowed to develop naturally, but devotees were assigned a spiritual master according to where they lived in the world. They were more or less told, this is your spiritual master. So it may not have developed actually with that natural faith. But I'm making a point, aside from these anomalies or mistakes in some cases great misfortunes, it's a natural thing that will happen. And so we see now in ISKCON, when new devotees come, in so many cases you see this. Some of you have even remarked to me that you get a little disturbed seeing how enthusiastic new devotees are toward their spiritual master, and wonder why you don't feel like that. but looking at it in a positive way, it's not a superficial or wrong thing that enthusiasm should be there. It's a natural thing that's happening. So wherever that happens, that relationship should develop. It's also not absolutely exclusive that it's only with one person. But we have relationships with different Shiksha gurus as they may develop to some serious degree. But then someone takes responsibility as we request them to be our initiating spiritual master. In one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada says, usually the one who is the Shiksha Guru later becomes the Diksha Guru. And we can take this to mean that the person who you actually learn from and become dependent on, you ask him at some point, now I'm serious enough, I want to be initiated, would you please initiate? He was already your instructor, and he continues to be your instructor. Without that, then how could he just be only a Diksha Guru, like a priest who did a ceremony? He would have to be Shiksha as well. But the ISKCON reality, as Prabhupada shaped it, is one in which devotees are maintained by service, in particular Prabhudatta Desh, and with a particular kind of service, and even authorities. In the case of ladies, their husband is also meant to be a spiritual authority. And Prabhupada himself experienced that as the movement grew. You could say, in a very general sense, there are two kinds of spiritual masters. One, it's more like with a small group of disciples, lives with them and gives them their services in every way. And then the other is one who travels widely, who has disciples perhaps in many places of the world, is linked with an institution, and who expects that his disciples will to some degree be taken care of by others. And so Prabhupada, he evolved through both. In the beginning, like in ISKCON, 26 Second Avenue, he took care of everything, teach how to put on tilak, and how to eat, and so on. But later, those things were, he couldn't do those because he had to spread Krishna consciousness. But he was so strong, and the devotees had such a loving relationship with him that they were able to always think of him as spiritual master, even if they couldn't see him very often. So now what we have is sort of, none of us who are initiating spiritual masters are as empowered as Prabhupada by any stretch. So we have to try to do both. He asks us to travel and make disciples in many places, and there's so many people coming to Krishna conscious movement, more or less, still, that one has to take many disciples. But we have to try to develop personal relationships. Now, my own experience is, I'm speaking not ideally, but practically, is that I have different relationships with different disciples. Some of them take it more personally than others and want to see, either they want to do some service that is directly connected with me, or they want to see how the service they're doing, wherever it may be in the world, even if I'm not living there or an authority there, how that service is service to their spiritual master. So I try to help them do that. It's done by through the mind and through the body and through words, and it doesn't depend on the spiritual master being always there. But it takes a strong desire on the part of the disciple. I try to help, and I'm encouraged when I see that. When I don't see that, provided the disciple is functioning well in some place in the world, then I accept that and I try to reciprocate with them as they want. But it would seem, from what we read in the in Shastras and see in the relationship with the Vaishnavas, that the more loving there is a relationship and real relationship, that's good, that's better than having a spiritual master to whom you don't feel strongly connected. Another point I've been making in recent years when I meet with disciples, because I know from letters and meetings that sometimes they're concerned with things that are material, because we're not so completely free of material desires or liberated in every way. We have material concerns and struggles. Economic, or we were just discussing health problems. Now, in one sense you can say anything in the devotee's life is spiritual, but at some point we're less spiritual when we're more neophyte. So the devotee with material problems thinks, well, I have a spiritual master. He's supposed to help me. These are my main concerns. Let me go to him with them. But I feel myself unable to. It doesn't seem that it's my duty to struggle with so many material problems of disciples. So I try to give hints to them how they can deal with those in a Krishna conscious way. I don't turn away from them and say, oh, you have material problems, you're not advanced, I don't want to associate with you, I only want to associate with advanced devotees. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying our relationship should be spiritual, and you should think that this is the real way, this is the important thing, and I can get it from my spiritual master. That is, how to endure my problems, how to not be so materially attached, how to chant properly, how to hear properly, and how to develop a higher taste. And so Krishna sent me a spiritual master for this, and let me go to him with that, not expecting him to solve the other problems, although he should know what they are. He shouldn't think that I'm saying the spiritual master should present an ideal profile without really saying what their problem is. I should be enough of a friend. We should be enough friends that I know, as we say, where you're at and what your problem is. But you know that to the degree it's something material, I can't solve it for you. I'm kind of waiting for you to come to a higher level or trying to go through it with you, with what you're going through. Because material things, no one can solve them in one sense. They're not to be solved. They're to be just endured and tolerated. And we cultivate spiritual life at the same time. Now, again, with Prabhupada, when we think of him on what I'm talking about, we could say that he more or less waited for disciples to come to a high enough level where they approached him to surrender and serve. When I say advanced, I don't mean that you have to be so advanced in terms of Krishna prema, but advanced in terms of getting relatively free of other concerns and coming for service and wanting to serve Krishna and devote yourself as a devotee. So in Prabhupada's case, unless someone was at that level, what they didn't have that much to do with him, because he wanted to direct them in those activities, and he was so eager and potent to do so. But say if somebody came to Prabhupada with a really materially entangling situation, he would say that, why are you so concerned with this? You should chant Hare Krishna. Don't worry about this. Don't be so concerned about this. He was very much on that platform himself.
You looking for Kapila? This is Seth Brookmeyer.
Sometimes we say that we can't imitate Prabhupada, so I don't try to imitate him. I try to follow him. So in this regard, I'm not so demanding, perhaps, as Prabhupada. Sometimes we say that we can't imitate Prabhupada, so I don't try to imitate him. I try to follow him. So in this regard, I'm not so demanding, perhaps, as Prabhupada was. And I try to be as sympathetic as possible to devotees not being able to fully surrender. But I don't want to be like Prabhupada says, that you become a pet guru who just flatters a disciple and cannot give strong instructions. So I try to be strong in that regard of reminding you that our relationship shouldn't be that I have to solve material problems, but that I know what your problems are, material or spiritual, and try to emphasize to you the spiritual solution. So, say you have a material problem, or a marriage problem. I meant to say a health problem, or a marriage problem. You may ask me, can I do this health regimen? Or can I marry this person? Or whatever it is. And then, having said, yes, it's all right, or why don't you consider this? Then our main exchange should be about the most important thing to do, and that's to go on with your sadhana. To go on with your Krishna consciousness, and not to get too overwhelmed by those other things. But a disciple has to be very sensitive and willing to reciprocate, because everything is voluntary. I'm not going to check up so much to see how much you're being involved in material things, and you have to take what I say and follow it by your own will. And my nature, which I can't, in some ways I can't, you can't change our natures. My nature is to be light in the direction, rather than to be strongly telling you everything that you should do. But I will tell you what to do, but you have to listen and be willing to do it, not only when it's not repeated and repeated again in a loud voice, but when it is told to you. If you want to do it, you can't say, I didn't say what to do, what would be the best thing to do. So I'm not exactly speaking the Hari Katha, but since we get together rarely, I thought these things would be important, and talk about our relationship. And the straight Hari Katha is also there in lectures and books, and it's good to hear that from the spiritual master, in addition to hearing it from our Foundacharya Srila Prabhupada. so. You have any questions?
In the afternoon to me, you said that the lack, I think it was like the lack in sadhana was because of a lack of higher taste, or taste for chain. So how do we develop more taste to
basically the sadhana without taste, which is called vaidhi bhakti, it can never be given up. Dhananjaya Maharaj gave the example yesterday. You've heard it so many times, but even as he spoke, I found myself fascinated and listening attentively because it seemed so important to me. He gave the example of that Rupa Goswami gives in Nectar of Instruction, that we're like jaundiced persons who can't taste sweets, but the holy name is the best thing for us, so we just go on doing it even without the taste. There's not some other thing to do. No, there are other things to do, but in no case should we abandon the sadhana, even if it doesn't have taste. But if we do it and do it and do it, chant our 16 rounds and read, but it just seems like a grind and there's no taste, then we have to think that I'm not doing it right. It's called niyamagraha, to follow the rules and regulations. But you don't get the result, or you don't know what the goal is. So while never abandoning the basic sadhana, rules and regulations, we should do other things, like seek out good association whenever we can. Remember that story Prabhupada tells, that he went, while he was still a householder, to visit his spiritual master on Braj Mandala Parikram, and everyone had a choice of hearing from Bhakti Sandha Saraswati Thakur or going to see a temple. So Prabhupada thought, oh, I won't benefit so much by just going to see a temple. I want to hear from my Guru Maharaj, who at that time hadn't even initiated him. So any opportunities like that to associate and hear, we should take. That may develop our taste, hearing from somebody who has himself developed taste. And there may be so many other things that could be wrong with our execution of sadhana. Sadhana should be done with the basic practices of austerity, like getting up early and not overeating, not talking for japa. If we're doing those things, those anartha activities, then it's like trying to make a fire and putting water at the fire at the same time. These may be reasons why we're doing sadhana but not getting any taste. In addition to, well, our spiritual master should be a good friend, so we can tell him everything. But also, either in marriage relationship or with other God sisters, if we can have intimate relationships where we can exchange those six symptoms of love, then others can help us. We can tell, not be ashamed, and say, I'm not able to get any taste from chanting of Hare Krishna. We may even know what the problem is, but we don't know how to. It may be some bad habit, and we know that that's affecting our sadhana, but we don't know how to change it. Or we know that our minds are agitated when we try to chant with some particular material problems. Or we're committing sinful activity and we can't stop it. So our devotee relationships will help us. I've mentioned that we should try to seek association good association. And I gave the example of Prabhupada and his Guru Maharaj. In that case, I was thinking that such a person will talk about Krishna Katha in a way that will inspire us. But now I'm giving a different kind of example, a relationship where someone will be willing to actually get down with us and talk about us and maybe help us give up our problems. But that person should be very Krishna conscious and help us in a personal way, but with Krishna conscious solutions. Well, there are many things to develop the higher taste, going to Vrindavan, Mayapur. Well, provided it's not something that happened in the past, if it's something that happened in the past and now is overcome, say before you even knew your spiritual master, it might not be necessary to bring up. But I think if you're already relating with him, if it's something serious, then I think it ought to be shared, because then he will know that. Because there might be some weakness of a relapse toward happening again, and then he'll say, well, you know, this was your problem, so be careful of that. Or he'll know that you got very good help from a certain person, and he can recommend that you do that again. The more he knows about you, the better. So anything major, if you can tell him that you had the problem and now it's cured, then it's good news for him. He doesn't have to just get the problem. The only way to judge that is you just have to try something. We do whatever is favorable, and we try to reject what's unfavorable. So you can try different things in your relationship with the spiritual master. If he tells you, don't tell me this kind of thing, then you needn't do it again. But if you see that he doesn't consider it a botheration. Then you can. And then because we take communication with our spiritual master as important, that helps us to act in the right way too, so that we won't have disturbing things to tell him. I don't want to get myself into such trouble that I have to tell my spiritual master about this. That's a topic in itself. What is the nature of our exchanges and communications? I told that story of myself when I was just beginning to know Prabhupada and didn't have that much of a relationship with him and didn't really know so much about what my relationship with Krishna was supposed to be. So I said to him, how does Krishna want me to be? That it seems to me that I could be different persons. But how does Krishna want me to be? Which is kind of what we're saying when we say, should I tell my material problems? Or should I present myself before the spiritual master as very positive thinking and always a good devotee? Or should I ask philosophical questions only? How should I be? So, but actually the way I asked this question, it was a rather complicated mental question. And Prabhupada said to the other, he didn't say to me directly, but he said to the others in the room, this boy, Steve, I wasn't even initiated, is doing nice service. He types and he gives his money. You should do like that. You also should do like that. So, of course, I was thrilled that he encouraged me or praised the little things I had done. But also, it showed me that the nature of our relationship was a simple one, based on service, and that he appreciated not just something very mental and subtle, but the very basic sacrifice of and willingness to do service, and so much so that he recommended it to others. Willing to type, willing to give money. These are real sacrifices and real services. So I said, I saw, I'm just his servant, and I will please him by doing these kind of services. I remember I asked another subtle question, that the Bhagavad Gita philosophy seems hard to understand, and it's not just like knowledge that you learn at a university, it requires some spiritual realization. How will I be able to gain this? So he wrote me back and said, you're a sincere devotee, so Krishna will reveal it to you as you do service. So there again, what was in a sense to me, a complicated problem, how to gain this mystical dimension to understand the statements of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada made it sound simple, that he will tell you what it means, because you're sincere. So these ideas of being sincere, not being duplicitous, and actually rendering service, these make for a good relationship. And then Bhagavad Gita says we should inquire philosophically about how to advance in spiritual life. Now, what I was saying in the beginning today, like that in ISKCON we're hearing many authorized voices, starting with the most authorized, Prabhupada, and then so many senior devotees. So what we want, it's like with the radio, you have to tune in. Sometimes if you're not tuned, all the voices are coming together, it's confusing. So you want to be able to tune in the radio band where your spiritual master is coming and listen a lot to, on that level. And then that's important. Now, when that's important and it enters your heart, that's good. You should ask a question and be able to really hear it. You could hear it from others, but you especially want to hear what he says. Same kind of questions that we ask, like your question: how can I develop how can I develop taste? But then I should really try to take it to heart how my spiritual master answered this question and try to apply it personally. With great faith. That would be the opposite of thinking, well, why should I ask him? I can ask anybody that question. I can ask anybody in the Bhagavatam class. We may ask. That's all right. Not that we're like a cult, we only listen to our guru, nobody else in ISKCON. But I'm saying we should tune in to what he says and really try to apply it and be inspired by it and have faith in it. Surangi, do you have any questions? Is it?
I just wanted to know, like, it's the service to Krishna or we make life more and
yeah.
So I just wanted to know for you.
Sure. Life membership is something that Prabhupada started. So it's any service, that's like a preaching service, service on behalf of the temple. So since the pure devotee asks us to do this service, it's as good as Krishna. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita doesn't say make life member. You may say, well, I don't know, this is not spiritual. Krishna doesn't say, but Krishna's pure devotee came and he said make life member. But while you make the life member or whatever you do, like Krishna said to Arjuna, fight. But when you fight, think of me and do it for me. So life membership should be done like that, not trying to collect a big amount of money or that you'll be praised for it, or you do it in a passionate way, but actually try to do it the way Prabhupada wanted. Like I hear sometimes, I don't know much about life membership, but I've heard that a mentality can develop where devotees, they really don't care about the life member. They just want to get the person's money. But as Prabhupada designed it, that person is supposed to be maintained with books and with spirit.
Sometimes I feel very bad for a member there, because we've got too many members in Bombay. So we neglect them, we don't have time to take care of all of them.
Just go back for new ones.
I feel bad for them,
yeah.
Because I can't take care of all of them.
Well, that's it. But of course, some of this is beyond your capacity. It's like managerial decisions. But as long as it's what you're doing, there's so many ways it could be improved. But as long as what you're being asked to do is still itself bona fide activity.
Like when I started my journey in Gujarat, so I was really fired up and I was thinking like 1 hour and still from there. When I came here and afterwards I was good.
You don't do that now?
No, I don't go out now. I just like have done that because I have fun for
But he's not asking you to do it.
No.
It seems like your service has just changed naturally. That that's you don't have to feel bad that you're not doing it as long as you're fully engaged. You're kind of on a higher level now. Maybe if you can improve the quality of your preaching when you make the life member, it will be more interesting. And not just think of it as going to get some a check for such and such, but that it's preaching to cultivate somebody.
Krishna
quickly showed you that mentality is not good. Krishna doesn't want us to be proud.
Sometimes
but the point of that when you make a little progress, then you become proud that I'm a good chanter. Even if I make a little progress, I should be so thankful that Krishna finally allowed me to be not so bad and not forget that I'm not advanced in chanting. So, not to make judgments on others. For example, we may see a devotee is chanting or she's chanting and they're falling asleep. But maybe they were up all night helping another devotee or something, and then right away we say, oh, they're not a good devotee, they're not advanced. It'd be better not to always, just by seeing one little thing you make some judgment. It's very bad. You don't really, you shouldn't do that. But be sympathetic to the devotee. It's just the envious nature of the conditioned soul. We think we're better than others, and when we see somebody not doing well, we think it's good for us. That's good. Now that I'm better than that person. But we should try to be more compassionate. I pray to my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and I try to pray to all the spiritual masters, or at least some of them, in the cyclic succession, and pray to Lord Chaitanya, pray to Krishna. And that's a very important prayer to make, that I may be able to chant Hare Krishna nicely. Now in the Bhagavatam classes each day we're hearing an Ajamil story about the holy names. What we're talking about is the practice of the holy name, how to improve our practice. So there's something that we can do, but that's limited, and then the rest is up to Krishna. So do both. Pray to the spiritual master and previous spiritual masters and to the holy name, but then show them that I'm really trying. I'm getting up early, I'm giving a good piece of, I'm giving the best time for chanting, and I'm trying to lead my life in a way that's free of sin and also free of too much agitation and complication, so that when I chant I can pay attention. Then when Krishna sees you're trying, like Prabhupada told me when I asked how can I understand the Bhagavad Gita, he said Krishna will help you, because if he sees you're sincere. Regulation. Especially us, because we have so many things to do. And the best time is the morning time. If you can get up early enough before you go to Mangalarati, and then in the time that's in the temple schedule for japa, and then if you haven't finished, then the rest of the day some time for that, and then try to do extra. But if not extra, at least the minimum should be done at the best times. Whenever you find yourself thinking, well, now with this is my japa time, but I want to do this today, I want to do that, try to resist that. And say, no. Because we're so like fruitive, we're like karmis, and we think that, well, the chanting, it's not going to produce anything. If I could make a few phone calls, or if I could talk to that person, then I would get something done. But getting chanting done is the most important thing to do.
Sometimes I try to talk to my friends, but then I remember who said better avoid talking to them, because if so many things come to your mind, then you want to talk,
And if they come to talk to you, then you can say, when do, is there some time when we can meet? Because I have, now is my time for job.
Because
when I
chant faster, I chant slow, then my mind is more
delayed.
Chant
faster
and not so
much. Yeah, that's natural. But don't chant so fast. Chant fast and hear. Writing everything down. Are you going to look at that later?
I better look at that later. I have things from a long, long time ago that I wrote down also. Oh. Yes, and periodically. I look at them not often enough.
You should write me a letter. I don't know exactly what you're up to.
I didn't know if it was mine or what I was doing, but before I came, I got a job that was like working for 7 days a week just to get money so I could come.
In New York?
Yeah, get a job in New York with a devotee.
Uh-huh.
But I was thinking, like, it seemed like I also was sacrificing the sadhana for it, and I was thinking, is this worthwhile to do this, to gain this, or am I just, you know, in other words, I was, my sadhana was lacking, and I was getting money so I could come here, thinking I could improve my sadhana, but in the meantime.
Yeah. Well, for many devotees, some time has to be spent making money, and a good way to use the money is to come to India.
Yeah.
But it has to be not ugra karma that. But by the time you do it, you don't even want to go to India or something. Sadhana, so when we, if you do something like that, your sadhana may suffer, but it shouldn't suffer to the point where it disappears or something. Obviously, not having to work 7 days a week and living in the dham, your sadhana will be better. But even if you do work, you should at least chant 16 rounds, follow the four rules. That job is not worth it, that I'm working and I've given up chanting. Or I'm working and I'm, because of the passion of working, I'm falling down from the principles, and that's not worth it. Then my idea is to go to India, I'll go to India with so many, such a bad mentality, and just have to purify that. Rather than make advancement, I have to purify all the dirt that I accumulated by working to go to India. And then a trip to India for someone in the West, it has to be carefully thought out and planned. Sometimes it's just impulsive. Oh, I'm having trouble, I'll go to India. But I go to India and nothing gets better. But why do I want to go to India? What will I do there? Not just wanderlust.
So I was happy that he was there just in case something was said wrong. He didn't tell us, put us back on the right track. So I asked him about this. I said, if I, like, now I have to go to Calcutta, you know, it's a 34-hour journey, I'm a bit scared, then it would make me take shelter of Krishna. But then when I thought, oh, I could, you know, send some vibration to make the journey easy and favorable, I thought, that's not good, because if I think I'm the controller and I want to bring on Krishna. And he answered that, no, you can use these things in Krishna's service. It's just like, if you're sick, you take medicine, or you, in order to have a good day, you take rest early and you plan ahead. So you don't think you're the controller, you're just using. And I was not satisfied. Still, now when I think, okay, I'll give some money for my travel, it will stop me from depending on Krishna, thinking of
And what does it actually mean? That, to send some healing ahead on something that's going to happen.
It helps, it makes...
Is it something just that I get into a state where I'll be able to accept whatever happens, or actually going to change physical events? Well, I don't see how that's possible. Maybe a yogi could do that. That I can see that there's going to be a train accident or a train delay, but I will change it now so that the switch will not be pulled and the train will not be delayed or something. That's controlling material nature. Those are great powers.
The person who was teaching was giving so many examples, was saying that there was a big traffic, and because he had this power of braking, his car reached 5 hours before the other car didn't have the power of braking. He gave so many examples like that.
So hard to accept for me.
Regulus driving to get their 5 hours out.
Reckless.
So it's better that I don't use this technique, just if I have to use it only for physical reasons.
Yeah. The little bit of healing that I know would be like religious healing, where you call on God to do these things. The Christians have a lot of physical healing. And that always seemed to me to be a very low order of religion. In that case, the power would be God's power, and you're asking him to change things for you. Or like to do with the demigods in Vedic culture. The demigods have power, and they can award you things, but we regard that as it's lower class. That's not pure devotion. I would think, Krishna, oh, now I have to go to Calcutta. It's always such a hassle. It's going to be a hassle, whether I know Reiki or not. So please let me not be so affected by it. Whatever happens, I'm just going to think ahead now. If something happens, I'm not going to get angry. I'm not going to get afraid. I'm going to chant my rounds, and I'm going to bring this book. What book should I bring that I'm interested in? I'll bring this book, and I'll think of this, and I'll do this. And, of course, things will happen unexpected, but I'll just turn to Krishna. Prepare myself like that. But not, you know, Krishna, please see that the train doesn't get delayed and that no dacoits come. That's fruitive. Sakama, devotee, full of desires. The devotee should be niskama. Yeah, there are some things like that we can take from and not take the whole thing, although it's risky to do. You have to be very careful. That one devotee, scholar, godbrother, Garuda Das, he used to use this word swanning. Like we have the word, there's another word, I can't remember. But Prabhupada says a swan can take, out of a mixture of water and milk, he can take the essence of milk. So by swanning, he meant that he was studying some things about Vaishnavism from scholars. And his whole idea was to become a respectable scholar as a devotee and then influence them. Well, that's risky work. So maybe you can learn something historical about Vaishnavism, but the person may be a Mayavadi. But like one devotee, Brabinda Sarup Prabhu, he asked Prabhupada, can I study, in college they want me to study Shankara. So you said if we study Shankara we're doomed, but you also want me to get this degree. What can I do? Prabhupada said, you can do it, but be careful. So there's some things that we, there may be some benefit for us in something, but we don't just naively take the whole thing. Maybe this is like that, that there's some techniques or something that are useful, and some of it you just can't accept. It just doesn't harmonize with pure devotional service. Otherwise you're accepting another guru, you accept as absolute whatever they say you do. That's foolish. What is their parampara? Why should you accept everything they say?
On that point, to try and talk a little more, if we accept, if we're sick, we want to do something about it, we don't just want to accept it, and we don't want to call on Krishna's help. So it would seem that we do look for help from others. But like an Ayurvedic doctor, he may worship Dhanvantari, or even the sun god, and ask blessings for his medicines to work on you. So would you say, would you like draw a distinction then between like the person? In other words, we're looking for help, so indirectly we're approaching Dhanvantari, or are we approaching the sun god?
Well, that's his business, that's the doctor's business. Okay. There may be other things he does too. And to some degree, the more Vaishnava he is, then we'll benefit by his association. But there's a certain material expertise that we're looking for, that he picks the herbs fresh, that he grinds them in the right way, that he's really knowledgeable about Ayurveda, which is a science of how to cure the body. And so just like you, you're always examining the doctors, and after a while, this one is good, that one's not good. It's mostly based on how well they know that particular science that we're going to them for. Now, his that I would say that was in the category of things that it may be harmful, but it's not, or it may be helpful, but it's not so important to us what he does personally. Whereas when we, in our relations with Vaishnavas, all those things are important. We want to know, what, you're worshipping Dhanvantari, you're worshipping a demigod, why don't you just worship Krishna? All the demigods are included, you don't have to worship a demigod. But we can't demand that of a doctor we see. On the other hand, if he tells us that we should worship Dhanvantari, then we say, I can't do that, I have a guru, my spiritual life is taken care of, I'm just going to you for medicines. But it's really tricky. Because everybody wants to be a guru or wants to wants you to take their whole program. We should be so well acquainted with what Krishna conscious life is that as soon as somebody asks us to do something, it's like I remember with that naturopath Hindu cure doctor, we were doing breathing exercises, and so that sounded all right, that it should be good for me. And then he said, while you do it, you should chant Om. And I did it once. I said, we don't chant Om, we chant Hare Krishna. So they said, all right, you can chant Hare Krishna. So, and I made the point in my class that about illicit sex, that it's so powerful, the temptation for illicit sex. So whenever we go out into the material world, away from the temple, we should always go on some direct mission for Krishna, so that then we see this sex, illicit sex and everything, but we know what we're doing. But if you're just out there and you don't have a direct mission, you get into more trouble. So kind of related to that, that I'm going to this doctor, I know exactly this is my devotional service and what I want to get from that person. It's like you're going to the ticket agents, you have a relationship with them, but it's focused on a particular devotional service. And then when by too much intimate association you start accepting other things from that person, then it gets dubious. Well, what does this have to do with my purpose in going to Recce? I don't have energy, I feel sick, so I can't chant, I can't do my service. I didn't come to this to learn how to control nature so that I could change things in the future and all this. So I don't want that, but I'll take this other thing. Like we go to people and they say, no milk, don't take any milk. I said, but our scriptures say that milk is good. No, that same doctor, he said, you show me in the Bhagavad Gita where it says that you should drink milk. I never heard that you should drink milk. So they're ready to contradict our teachings based on those. So those things we can't accept. Whatever is contrary to devotional service. Then they say that the disease was cured, but the patient died. Or the operation was a success, and the patient died. So you'll get well, but you won't be a devotee anymore. I think I'll use up my time.
Can I just take that little point just a little bit further, because I think a lot of devotees would be very interested, a lot of devotees tell problems. So, and it seems what you're saying, the real thing is our consciousness as a devotee, that we should always maintain that in any situation. So the example of a doctor, and when you get into Ayurveda or nature cure or some different natural systems, and maybe this Reiki and maybe another system, there is a tendency for a whole philosophy to go along with it.
Oh yeah.
And which would completely divert you from Krishna consciousness, which isn't, we're not looking for philosophy, we have philosophy.
Yeah.
So if a person always maintains their identity as a devotee, so that person may be asking, like in that example, chant on. But if we're trying to always think as a devotee, then we'll say, well, I prefer to chant Hare Krishna. And if he would accept that, that's the limit to how far he's going to involve you in his philosophy and his system. But we could do that, because devotees do get sick, maybe even more than non-devotees.
Yeah.
And they're looking for ways, and they're...
Yeah. So, like, the extreme example on the subtle plane is the psychologist. So the psychologist, you put yourself in a very submissive relationship with them and tell them all your innermost secrets and everything. So just as that man said, all right, you're a devotee, so you can chant Hare Krishna, although I said you should chant Om. But the psychologist, he has to go much further. He has to, I respect that you're a Vaishnava and you follow the four rules, that you want to be celibate. I think it's good for you to be celibate, and I'm trying to help you to become a better devotee to serve Prabhupada. If they don't sincerely feel those things, then you're in a dangerous situation going to them. And best is if you can go to Vaishnavas. So, like, whatever the elements in Reiki that are, or something, some process, that are helpful. If some devotee can take them out and make like a Krishna conscious version of it, then we're in better shape. But until then you have to really be careful. So I agree that sometimes we're so desperate and our service is suffering that we try some system. We have to try something.
Okay, so further help, because I'm intending to use this Reiki technique, so how to have the proper attitude. The technique is that there's a master who draws a channel in the person, so that the person has the ability, in accordance with the chakras, the person has the ability to draw energy from, they call it prana.
You received what from devotees?
Some healing, Reiki.
Oh, from devotees.
Who had done the course.
Uh-huh.
And I experienced an amazing change.
Uh-huh.
Changes in physical energy, and I could chant better. And especially in Vrindavan, I could take advantage of the paragrams, etc. So that's why I decided to do the course.
Uh-huh.
And now, I know I'm not supposed to ask Krishna for physical health, but then how am I supposed to understand this energy coming through my hands to heal? It comes from Krishna, so I'm using Krishna's energy, prana, cosmic energy, whatever, to heal.
Mm.
And before starting, one has to thank God. So I thank you, Krishna, for healing me or healing that other person. So how can I, what should be my meditation if I use Reiki healing physical difficulties?
I think maybe I should do some more research on Reiki. When I was coming to Bombay, I never even heard the word Aburijan. I said something about somebody or Bombay, and he said something about Reiki. I said, what's that? And he laughed. He said, what? You haven't heard of Reiki? So before I say something harsh or judgmental or naive, maybe I should find out a little bit about it. But
today I had your Patrick Prabhu, and I think Dhanudhar Swami and Burjan, they went to speak with the master this morning to ask question and inquire, because it's a little wave coming
in. Oh, well, then that's just what I need, is to hear from them. I regard those persons as very responsible and my well-wishers. I would probably do that anyway, but I wouldn't know whether to, now I know that they actually will be able to know what it is, and talking with the master, get some idea how it fits in with Krishna consciousness.